It's arguable that of all the books published in the past 250 years, Edward Gibbon's The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire is among the most influential. We're indebted to it for quite a number of things. The phrase decline and fall, for one thing, which in various reinterpretations continues to appear in everything from book and movie titles to cartoons to song lyrics. Noel Coward, that hilariously flamboyant English songsmith and wit from the 40s and 50s, famously mentioned it in a song called I Went to a Marvelous Party. Perhaps you read some of it in your Western Civ class in high school. The book, I mean, not the song. Although the first of its six volumes was published in 1776, an auspicious year, Gibbon's monumental history is not only readily available to this day, but some of its ideas are still very much with us. Among these is Gibbon's particular take on how the empire came to fall. Ancient Rome, he contends, was a civilization in which the active virtues flourished and a military spirit held sway, and that these were what sustained the great and glorious empire. But something terrible happened. An awful revolution took place. Christian clergy, he writes, successfully preached the doctrines of patience and pusillanimity. The active virtues of society were discouraged, and the last remains of military spirit were buried in the cloister. A large portion of public and private wealth was consecrated to the specious demands, he writes, the specious demands of charity and devotion. And the soldiers' pay was lavished on the useless multitudes of both sexes who could only plead the merits of abstinence and chastity. Sounds awful, doesn't it? It's pretty hard not to see where Gibbon's sympathies lie. He laments the passing of glorious Rome, very much so, sustained as it was by macho militarism. It is unmistakable that these virtues built and sustained the empire. Without the widespread, frequent, sustained, and systematic use of violence by its very considerable military power, its regime could not exist. Well, I know I don't look like much, but according to Gibbon, it was guys just like me who brought the once mighty empire to its knees. To me, that's quite delicious to contemplate, a superpower I hadn't quite realized I had. I don't think I actually preach pusillanimity. I looked it up. It means timidity and lack of courage. But I very much do preach patience and other evils like charity and devotion. It's horrible, I know. Really, a lot of very buff dudes were quite overcome by the simple preaching of these ideals. So, you know, don't mess with me. It's interesting to note, though, that when this devastating weapon called Christianity was turned on the barbarian hordes to the north of Rome, Gibbon regards its influence is pure and genuine, its effects beneficial, though imperfect. I guess he didn't like the barbarians as much, since they make even us Christians look good. Of course, there are other versions of the story. We heard one of them this morning from chapter 12 of the book of Revelation, also quite an old book, still in publication. Here's the relevant passage. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. The dragon and his angels fought back, but they were defeated and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven proclaiming, "Now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah. For the accuser of our comrades has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. But they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. For they did not cling to life. They did not cling to life, even in the face of death." The phrase "war broke out in heaven" always shocks me, and I think it's intended to. I had been thinking that heaven is the one place war could never break out. If we accept that the writer, John of Patmos, having been banished to the island of Patmos by Roman authorities during the reign of the Emperor Domitian, he's essentially in prison. If we accept that he is writing in a context of Roman imperial violence and persecution, which is quite personal for him, for John, perhaps we can infer something of what he is trying to say. So insatiable was Roman imperial hunger that it was like a mad dragon invading everywhere, including heaven. That the dragon was thrown down is a matter of record. Gibbon records it exhaustively, beginning with his title, that the violence of Rome was cataclysmic and relentless is equally evident. It is apparently this that Gibbon admires, though others don't. An empire built on slavery, fear, and domination, based on relentless torture and killing. Crucifixion was among its primary motivational procedures. Crucifixion was used relentlessly to keep the slaves in order, for example. Thousands upon thousands were crucified. These were the empire's undoing. One in particular. There can be no doubt. The Girardian scholar Paul J. Nuchterlein makes this observation. While chapter 12 of Revelation makes it clear that martyrdom was the way to victory, it is not clear who wins the victory. The scene begins with Michael and the angels kicking the dragon Satan out of heaven. But are they the ones who conquered through martyrdom? I would suggest that it is the faithful followers of the Lamb on earth who win the victory, which is mirrored by the action of the angels kicking Satan out of heaven. It is the victory of a dead sheep, of a slain lamb, whose time-honored symbol is on the cover of our leaflet today. And is often found on frontals of altars and in windows and other places. For example, it might have been on this antipendulum, this thing that hangs on the front of the altar, the antipendulum, good Roman word, that. Its power is at the same time impossible. The power of the slain lamb is at the same time impossible and blatantly obvious. They defeated this mighty empire by dying to it, exposing its violence through martyrdom. It was unmistakable and could not be seen after that. The unknown Galilean sees it coming when his friend's head is served on a platter and he begins to teach his disciples about life after crucifixion. For Rome, it is a fatal insight. Perhaps Gibbon was right, that the carefully cultivated practice of martyrdom, the disciples learned from Jesus, that carefully cultivated practice they learned from him, the one that brought Rome to its knees, perhaps that was quite pusillanimous. Perhaps martyrdom was based fundamentally on cowardice. Perhaps the thousands who carried it on gave their lives and kept it alive in cloister and monastery after that. Perhaps they were just the quote-unquote useless multitudes of both sexes which Gibbon describes. Or perhaps not. I guess we might think that if it had been only Roman violence that was defeated by it, we might think that. But when we see that 20 centuries later, for example, the British Raj was driven out of India by the same practice, learned from the very same still crucified teacher, perhaps we can see that a more universal power is at work here. It's not just Roman violence that the dragon represents. Violence itself is thrown down, not just by archangels in heaven, but here on earth by a whole bunch of slayed lambs whose assiduously cultivated and deeply courageous nonviolence is a mainstay of protest and revolution to this day. We saw a spectacular example of it on Friday, and whose time-honored symbol, as I've said, is on the cover of our leaflet today, the slain lamb. It's also found in other places, as I've said, and that's what we celebrate at Michaelmas, that victory of the slain lamb, that end of violence. So you know what? Why not? Let's wrap it all up in Noel Coward. You know, people's behavior away from Belgravia would make you aghast. So much variety watching society scampering past. You know, if you have any mind at all, Gibbon's divine decline and fall sounds pretty flimsy, no more than a whimsy. By way of contrast, on Wednesday last, I went to a marvelous party.